Becky and I teamed up to come up with a new resource for your family for the Easter season. It starts 40 days before Easter, so it's something for you to count down and do during family worship time or a school time with your children in the mornings. Becky, tell us a little about the cards that come with it.
So it comes with 40 different daily devotional cards. It starts in Genesis and carries all the way through to the resurrection. And all of the cards are pointing us to Christ. They're all leading up to that culminating event of his death on the cross and then his resurrection. So each day there's a daily reading. So there's a scripture or multiple scriptures that tie together. And then there's just some discussion questions. And I tried to write them in a way was able to be tailored to different ages. So it can work for younger children. If you have smaller children in the home, you can still answer these questions, talk through them with them. And then if you have older children or other adults in your home, you can still have in-depth conversations. It just depends how far you want to go with the answers and things of that sort.
And the resource also comes with a graphic that you can either frame or hang on your refrigerator that says, "I am the resurrection and the life," has a lamb on it and 40 numbers. And then you can just either cross those off or use a hole punch to mark them off as the days pass. But it's just a countdown leading up to Easter. And then once Easter happens, we have a fun He is Risen page that will take the place of the countdown. So this is something that we wanted for our families, a countdown leading up to Easter that you can have that same excitement and anticipation that you have at Christmas time, but for the Easter season. So we hope that this is a blessing to your family. It's on the Fruitful and Fearless website, so check that out. I'll be posting about it in stories, and I'll show you ours too. So anyways, check it out at the Fruitful and Fearless shop, Waiting for the Lamb.
Welcome to the Fruitful and Fearless podcast, where we're serving up gospel-fueled courage to the Christian woman to remain faithful in her calling.
Hello, and welcome to the Fruitful and Fearless podcast. I apologize that my voice is really weird. Our whole family has been sick for a couple weeks now.
Yeah,
and
maybe longer.
It got me. So now I am sick too, but I'm well enough to do this at 5:30 in the morning.
But it's crazy because these are pretty much your first words this morning and no voice, you know, training or anything before you get started. You just got going.
Yeah. I woke up thinking about it. So, and you've been awake for hours. So it's like, how about we record?
Yes. We've had wave after wave of flu type A. Is that it?
Who knows?
I'm really not sure. Whatever government thing.
Yeah.
We have.
It has been our plague at our church this year. Last year it was strep throat. We had a giant wave of strep throat hit our church. Do you remember that?
I do.
And this year we have had
bad strep throat.
Yeah. And this year we have had a giant wave of flu A.
Well, Ransom had it. And then I thought we were in the clear.
I know, because we had like 5 days of him being well and no one getting it. So I was like, oh, maybe he just got something.
Then Valor went down.
Yeah. Then
Providence. And now you.
And it finally got me.
Me and Oak, we're hanging on.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
You're willing yourself not to get it.
That's right. Well, other than that, how are you?
Good. So Becky and Kate and I are going to be doing a series about the church calendar. Well, not about the church calendar, about the church calendar events from now leading up to Easter. And just kind of talking about what Lent is, what Ash Wednesday is, and what those things are and the history behind them. But before we talk about that, Jared and I wanted to talk about just the church calendar in general, because people have a lot of feelings surrounding the church calendar, right? Like Spurgeon was very anti-church calendar.
He would preach a Easter sermon and a Christmas sermon. So there was some recognition there.
Right.
Not totally anti.
Yeah. But he was not a fan of the church calendar because he felt that it produced
unhealthy love of seasons or days that is not prescribed in the scriptures.
Right, and not a genuine affection or genuine worship, but more of like a scheduled, this is our thing.
Yes, and there's a over-formalization that can happen with almost anything. And I think just words of caution, even when you're talking about catechizing your children, J.C. Ryle he talked about how you can catechize your children, but they don't love the Lord, they don't love the scriptures, and if it's just a rigid, formulaic process. So I think there's any sort of, there's wisdom in almost anything to not over-formulize seasons, days, systems, catechesis, or anything. And just, you want to love the Lord. And I think when we're talking about this, what we've done is not so much at the church level. We've certainly recognized Christmas Sunday, Easter Sunday. We've gone through, you know, different seasons. We've done an Advent series before, multiple years. But more so, we've been encouraged in family worship time. And some of the things that you and Becky put together even last year was helpful during Advent. I think these things are going to be helpful during this season. And patterns can be really helpful if you have proper perspective on them.
But it even reminds me of the chapter that you guys are going to be going over for Sons and Slaves about the boy who loved going to church and know all these things, but his heart was yucky.
Yeah.
And that is the caution behind some of this stuff. But honestly, like, are we not doing that with all of our discipleship of our children, teaching them things and hoping that the Spirit is actually what is bringing it to life?
Yeah.
So there are people even at our church, probably they're on both sides of the fence about church calendar stuff. Some would probably be nay, and some are very into it, know all about it, take their tree down at Epiphany, you know. And so we are going to kind of shed some light on some of the things about the history of the church calendar, what it is, what is Catholic about some things about the church calendar, what is not Catholic about some things about the church calendar. Because growing up in my family, any of like Lent was just like a Catholic thing.
Right.
I knew nothing about it other than my Catholic friends went on Ash Wednesday and got ash on their head. That's about the extent of what I knew about Ash Wednesday.
Same.
You know, so I, as an adult, have just found it interesting to learn what all these days were about.
Yeah. And so I think it's fun to be informed and also know that there is in a long line of history within Protestantism as well of seeing value in those times throughout the year and the schedule of our life as a church family, and then even as individual families, to recognize that there really is a gospel story throughout the year of being reminded about the work of Christ and who we are, sin, salvation. So I think there's just a couple words of subtle caution that I could bring to recognize that there are people on different sides of the fence, but we can be generous on how we understand these things. The first would be from Romans 14, and it says this: one person esteems one day better than the other, while another esteems all days alike. Each should be fully convinced in his own mind. The one who observes the day observes in honor of the Lord. The one who eats, eats in honor of the Lord, since he gives thanks to God, while the one who abstains, abstains in honor of the Lord and gives thanks to God. So there are even people in the Protestant tradition, and this is what the Puritans would have been like, who rejected even Christmas and Easter. They didn't want anything to do with those sorts of things. We are on the other side of that. We love Christmas. We love Easter. We love the season, everything about Christmas time. I really, really enjoy. So by default, most Americans at least embrace some form of the Christian calendar, and most Protestants do as well, unless you're an anti-Christmas.
Well, and even Sunday being the Lord's Day is a weekly celebration.
Absolutely.
Christ raising.
Yeah. So we have weekly patterns that God is built into our life and established for the church. But generosity. The Bible anticipates that church members, even within the same local congregation, are going to have differing views on secondary and tertiary things. And this would be one of those. And they're each to be fully convinced in their own mind, and they're to be generous to one another. And I think this is like the category of something like eschatology or gifts of the Spirit, where you can see things differently and yet be generous towards one another and see the value of a different position. And I think as they're, you know, Jordan and Becky are working through this, and Kate as well, then, you know, take what you can and enjoy it. And even some of these resources that has been put together, employing those in family worship, can be tremendously helpful. And just like with anything, if you don't want to, okay, that's fine. But there's certainly value, I think, in this. So one caution would be just not purity spiraling one way or the other to say, if you don't love the church calendar, if you're not all about it, then you're being foolish and missing out a real gift to the church. And the other side is, if you hate the church calendar and you think it's too rigid and it's formulaic and it's going to be legalistic, you shouldn't be doing this, then I think that's also a word of caution from Romans 14. Yeah. So anything else on that?
Nope. I was just going to share a little bit about the history of it. The history of the church calendar.
Well, let me do one more thing then.
Okay.
And then we'll go to that. Okay. So Matthew chapter 6, this is one caution that could be applied to even things like Ash Wednesday or how we talk about certain things in our walk with the Lord that need to be private between us and the Lord. And some aspects of church calendar things do need to be private unless we violate clear commands in the scripture like this. Talking about fasting. When you fast, do not look gloomy like the hypocrites, for they disfigure their faces, that their fasting may be seen by others. Truly I say to you, they have received their reward. But when you fast, anoint your head and wash your face, that your fasting may be seen by may not be seen by others, but your Father who is in secret. And your Father who is in secret will reward you. And if you're one of those people that announces, here's what I'm giving up for Lent, and this you walk around with ash on your head too, and you got to be careful about this. But if it's to be seen by others, then there's some violation there of what's going on here in this warning that Jesus gives about fasting. So we're not to be fasting or doing anything that is between us and the Lord to be seen by others. We're not praying on the street corner to be seen by others. Jesus warns that if you do that to be seen by others, you've received your reward, which is the watching eye, other people seeing how dedicated, devoted you are to the Lord, or how high church you are, or how much you love the church calendar, how much you're going to give away, or you're going to fast for Lent. And those are just, again, warnings that you can explicitly violate commands of Jesus if you're doing things to be seen by others. So just a couple words of warning as these things are considered.
Yeah, I think that's important. Because all the things that we're doing with our families, we're not doing it as a show to other people. And yeah. Instagram is such a easy way to sin.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, be cautious as you are doing things. Are you doing this to disciple your children and to bless your families and for devotion to Christ? Or are you doing it because it's Instagram worthy? Or even like for your family, are you doing this for your so that your family thinks that you're like a really devoted Christian? Or is it because you actually love Christ?
I think years ago, I followed a few pastors that I really appreciated. But one of the things that they did that later on I realized, you know, that actually is another violation of what Jesus is talking about. They would always post their real pastoral work. So they would take a picture of themselves at the nursing home, just visited so-and-so, and Betty is just recovering from heart surgery and whatever it may be, and join me in praying for her or something. And it was supposed to be like, look, pastors do pastoral work. But the further I got removed from that, announcing your good works before men and posting what you're doing, and I can't necessarily judge the heart of
right.
those people, but for me, if I'm going out and I'm visiting somebody from the church or going to visit a new baby at the hospital that's born or going to visit somebody after they in their sickness and praying for them and anointing oil and those sorts of things that are real pastoral work, but then posting it out for people to see, I can't help but hear Jesus' words, you have received your reward, the reward of being seen by others. And so there's so many things in our walk with the Lord that are done in secret and they need to stay in secret. And over time, you will get a reputation for being devoted to good works, but not because you're announcing them, but because people see them. They recognize your godliness.
I do think it has to be balanced, though, because let your light so shine before others that they would see your good works and glorify your Father.
100%.
So it's like we don't hide that we're a Christian.
No.
And we don't never post any Christian-y things that we're doing because we're supposed to let our light shine before others. But it should be done in a God-glorifying way and not in a self-glorifying way. And that's what you're talking about, the caution there.
Absolutely.
Of like, what is your motive behind it? And that's why we do have to be cautious about what others post too, and not pronouncing judgment on they're doing that for their own glory. Because like you said, you don't really know. Mm-hmm. You don't know the heart of what people are doing. And that's what, this is getting on a rabbit trail. I don't know if I should go there or not. The danger with the whole, a couple years ago, everybody talking negatively about the trad wife stuff. And it's like, you don't know the heart behind these women who are posting about their homes and the things that they're doing around their homes. Maybe it is to inspire others, because I find a lot of that stuff really inspiring. I'm like, oh, I want to do that to my garden, or oh, I want to bake that. So inspiring others with your good works is a great thing to do.
Yeah, and if you're going to compare virtue here, being a trad wife is a whole lot better than being the OnlyFans girl.
Right.
So if you're
a promiscuous wife.
Yeah, it's a whole lot better than that. But yeah, I think with anything, we want to be humble before the Lord And, you know, you're not doing good works to be seen by others. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole point. And the same thing, not doing the church calendar to be seen by others, mm-hmm. but to be edified, built up, and encouraged, and see those patterns in your life that can be, you know, some people are really good. And Jordan and I are a little bit different in this as well, but some people are really good with less structure, and some people have to function with structure. Mm-hmm. And this can provide some needful and helpful structure sometimes to our lives that is somewhat of an anchor and foundation. And not foundation like for our faith, but foundation for just being a well-ordered person who's walking with the Lord. And structure can be really helpful.
So, okay, so first we have in like the first to third century of early Christians just wanting to lay a foundation, like what you said, for a couple days through the year. So they have the Lord's Day and they have Easter. And then there's a big debate for a very long time about when Easter should be. And then by the second century, Christians were already...
What?
Okay, so then second century, some churches were already tying it closely to Passover. When mm-hmm. Passover was. And then others were insisting that it always fall on a Sunday. So it has to be on a Sunday. And so, of course, like all of time,
debates
ensued.
Punching.
And then we get to the fourth century and Constantine is on the scene. And that's when things really start ramping up with a church calendar. Because Constantine legalizes Christianity. And we have the Council of Nicaea in 325, and this finally standardized the date of Easter, and we get Easter Sunday. So Easter would now be celebrated on the first Sunday after the first full moon following spring equinox.
Which is such funny.
A hard thing to remember. Like, has there been a full moon?
When is Easter this year? It's always early. Is it late?
Yeah. So anyways, that is how we have the date of Easter. The Council of Nicaea decided this is how we shall have Easter into our year every year. Okay. And then around this time, the church also expanded into celebrating stuff surrounding Easter. Lent became a 40-day period of fasting in preparation for Easter. We had Holy Week, remembering Christ's final days. And then development of the Christmas cycle was also 4th through 6th centuries. And then with that, we had Advent, the preparation for Christ's coming, then Christmas and Epiphany. And then we had in the Middle Ages, is when they started adding saints and feast days. Okay, so that was like 500 to 1500 AD. And the calendar started getting way more detailed with like apostles and martyrs and theological things, theologians and saints and special days honoring events like Trinity Sunday. We both did a shoulder shrug. Corpus Christi. Okay, and then the Reformation changes things. So Martin Luther's like, no, we're not going to have all of these saints and stuff on the calendar. And the Reformers really focus the church calendar back down to the Lord's Day, Christmas, Easter, sometimes Pentecost, stuff like that. So that's kind of a very brief timeline of where things originated, how they morphed, and then the Reformation kind of bringing it back down to some of the more core dates of the year.
Yeah, so the scriptures themselves do not prescribe these sorts of things, but the church wants to think about the work of Christ, and they want to prepare ourselves corporately to think about the work of Christ throughout the year.
Right, so it wasn't actually meant to be a schedule for the year. It was actually meant to be a year-long teaching of the gospel. That was mm-hmm. the whole reason that it was created, is they wanted it to walk us through every year a retelling of the gospel story.
Yeah. And if you look at this on a weekly schedule, what does the Lord's Day do? Well, at the beginning of the week, what we do for the Christian Sabbath is remember that the work of Christ is done. We remember his life, death, resurrection. We come to the table, we commune with him, and then we're sent out throughout the week knowing that we're right with God, we have peace with God, and we're on mission together in our homes, at work, you know, so on and so forth. And so weekly we know this, and then just expand it out seasonally or yearly, and then you've got these different patterns throughout the year that are similar to our regular week in and week out schedule.
Yeah. I have a question.
Yeah.
So why is it that a lot of the, like, I don't know what the right word is, like normal church, lower church maybe,
mm-hmm.
churches consider a lot of these days of the year to be Catholic, like a Catholic thing?
Well, because so much of our church history in Protestantism in this country has been low church. and even a lot of, for instance, like the Scottish Covenanters. I was just reading this book by this book that I'm reading for the boys that's about Sergeant York.
Oh, yeah.
He's the most decorated war hero in American history from World War I. And he talks about the Appalachian people and how low church the Appalachian folks were. And they don't want prayer books. They didn't want any of that kind of thing. And they were mainly coming from Scotland, which, you know, Scotland was Scottish Presbyterians. And they ended up coming over here. And just a lot of, especially Southern Presbyterianism, was very, very low church. It wasn't a high church. You know, think what Cornerstone Reformed is now. It was very much not like that. So even a lot of the Episcopalians that came here from the Church of England developed their own flair that was a little bit different than the Church of England. And so a lot of it was almost like a breaking away of some of the formulaic, what they would have saw as formulaic, and that's what the Puritans dealt with too, is, hey, listen, we want to get back to what is the scriptures prescribed. And a lot of the stuff that had come into the church, they saw, this is not prescribed by the Bible. Why are we doing this? So what they did is kind of threw the baby out with the bathwater and said, hey, listen, we subscribe to the regular principle of worship, so we're not going to do all this kind of stuff. But also, anything that's extra biblical, we're just going to throw out as well. Not seeing that there are some things that are helpful and valuable. So I think a lot of just the cultural aspects of Christianity in America saw only Catholicism as high church, church calendar kind of thing, and Protestantism or low church, we just don't have any value for that. But there's always been within, you know, Presbyterianism within our country and Lutheranism and even Anglicanism, there's always been some of that still there and strong, where people in our area would say, oh, that's just Catholic stuff. Mm-hmm. And it isn't just Catholic stuff, but I mean, we're in Southern Illinois. There's mainly non-denominational churches, Baptist churches, Pentecostal churches that kind of wholesale reject all that stuff. So just the culture we grew up in, yeah, is an environment that just throws that stuff out.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious about that because, you know, even you would think in the Baptist church that I grew up in, like all the reasons behind the days of the church calendar that we would celebrate are things that we were celebrating as a church anyway. You know what I'm saying? Like, we were celebrating a season leading up to Easter in the non-denominational church, actually, that I grew up in.
But still, in that same church, probably, and just like the church I grew up in, if you said, okay, we're going to do, you know, an Advent series leading up to Christmas, people would be like, whoa, what? We're not Catholic here. You know, we're going to do a Lent series leading up to Easter. It's like, well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That's, why are we doing that? Mm-hmm. So I think there's a natural kind of recoil almost, or gag reflex to some of that for people who grew up in environments like we did.
Yeah. So my question then now is, will you explain why we as a family celebrate Advent, and even, this is not a part of the church calendar, but even things like Reformation Day. I don't know if we've ever formally had this conversation about why we do this as a family, but what do you think are the reasons that we do this as a family?
Well, one, I think it's interesting, and I still have in me just the default from growing up in the environment I grew up in, some almost recoil as to diving in full blown into church calendar stuff. So for me, I still have, you know, almost by default prejudice against, let's not get too formulaic kind of thing. But I do think that there is value, just like I said with the Lord's Day, of having times throughout the year where we celebrate specific things that Christ has accomplished for us, or contemplating specific things that we need forgiveness for. And, you know, thinking about leading up to Christ and Good Friday, the fact that my sin came with great cost, and the only answer for my sin was the death of Christ. And building that pattern within our children to be thinking through, hey, sin, there's a cost to sin. And sin is sin against God, the God of the universe. And then throughout the year with these different times, there's just an element of fun there. And it's enjoyable. I think it's helpful in the mind of a child to be thinking through what Christ has done, and then doing that on repeat. And I think it's helpful for me as well. I think it's good for us to remember that. So what do you think?
Yeah, I think it makes intentionality easier when it's built in. So it's things that I want our children to learn, things about the life of Christ that I want them to learn. And if it's built into our life, this celebration and anticipation leading up to Christmas of where we do all these special things and we talk about Christ coming and we read stories about all the different aspects of the Christmas story. Mm-hmm. And it's built in what I want to do anyway.
You know, it's fun even just talking about this because now as we're talking, I'm thinking about how quick life can happen to you and how quick time goes. Mm-hmm. And you look back and you think something happened just 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh my goodness, that was 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And without that intentionality, life can just get going and you're doing family worship or you're doing this or that. And you miss opportunities to be built into your life that give some sort of structure to your family.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes it takes snow days or sickness or something like that to slow you down enough to be like, oh yeah, we want to be a family that reads out loud on the couch, you know,
yes.
Or we want to be a family that goes on hikes together or we want to be a family that does this or that or camps. And you have to be slow enough to decide what do we want to do as a family and then put that into practice because it doesn't happen on accident.
That's so true.
You don't accidentally become a family that reads a novel out loud. You know what I mean? You have to decide intentionally, we want to be this type of family. And the things with the church calendar help to force you into things that you might already want to do. You may want to teach your kids about Holy Week. And the church calendar helps you to, okay, this is the week that we're going to learn about everything that happened to Christ the week before his death.
And there's resources already built in that you can find that are good and helpful for that. You know,
like
this
on the Fruitful and Fearless website.
Yeah, like right. Plug, shameless plug here. But you know what's neat? Thinking about snow days. Snow days are wonderful. When we get snowed in, it's great.
And you just get a surprise day of nothing to do.
Yes. Oh, it's so great. Like our snowed in.
Except for enjoy beauty.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody's got to work at home, stay at home, read on the couch, whatever. It's so great. But also, things that are valuable, you got to put it on the calendar. Mm-hmm. So think about vacation. You know, we're talking about, okay, can we get to vacation? You got to put a date on the calendar. This is the date that we're going to go. Then you got to book it. And you've got to get a house to stay.
Buy the things you need for
it. You got to buy the things you need. You got to put it on the calendar. And if you don't put it on the calendar, the date comes and goes and you realize, well, wait a minute, we didn't do this because we never put it on the calendar. We never booked up.
You didn't accidentally get to Florida.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Which is your vacation place of choice. Oh, it really doesn't matter, Florida or not. It's the ocean. Or the Gulf. The Gulf will satisfy.
Oh, any salt water and sun, I am very happy about.
It's in you. It's in. There's something
within
you.
It calls out to me.
And especially come January or February, I can tell Joby wants to go to Florida. It is in her.
I want to go to the sunshine and beach really bad.
And my daughter.
And I want to pretend like I live there.
Pravi's the same way. Yes. She's
longing for it right now, too.
She loves
the
beach.
And I didn't tell her to do that.
The other day, I tried to paint a picture for her. I was like, all right, if you could sit in a hot tub and look at a mountain peak and see snow on the tops of the mountains and you're sitting and just enjoying the view, would you rather have that or would you rather be sitting on a beach looking at the ocean? And of course, she's like sitting on the beach looking at the ocean. Like, I want to be swimming.
Yeah.
Like, what about the mountains? So, I don't know. It's just fun having this conversation because I think it's, I get excited just talking about it. And I think it's helpful. And for you out there, you know, I hope you get somewhat excited just thinking about it as well. Just intentionality throughout the year. That is just such a helpful word to be thinking through your life. Don't let life happen to you. Mm-hmm. Grab it. And there's so...
What? The busyness, like you were... Sorry.
That's right.
You want to finish your thought?
No.
I tell you what, though. Busyness does happen to you. What?
We've already been going 30 minutes.
Oh. Busyness does happen to you.
Absolutely, it does.
And you're like, wait a minute, have we sat down to dinner as a family in a week and a half? Like, that happens to you, and you have to intentionally not let it.
Or the thought, we've had like 5 nights at home this week, and then you look at your calendar, it's like, wait, actually, we've just had one.
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
Yeah. So you have to be intentional to not let that happen, and for your kids to grow up and be like, darn it. There was a lot of things that I really wish I would have done or really wish I would have made normal
in
our family.
How many older parents, if you ask them about raising their children, say, I wish we would have done this, wish we would have done that. And I'm sure there's probably going to be things like that for us.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to think about it and do it now rather than regretting not doing certain things for your family years, you know, years down the road and thinking, oh, I wish we would have done this, wish we would have done that, wish we would have had these schedules and patterns built into our life. Mm-hmm. That would have been so helpful. We'll do it.
Yeah.
And
I will tell you this, sometimes whenever you are so busy and overburdened with lots of things on your mind and schedule and plate, the intentionality feels like just more of a burden mm-hmm. to put on you.
Yeah.
And you sometimes have to take some things off the schedule that are of less importance so that you can find the inspiration and like the want to mm-hmm. for some things that you actually do find more important. So sometimes you need to sit down with a piece of paper and be like, brain dump, here's all the things in our life that take up a lot of time.
Yeah.
And what can we weed out so that our brains have enough room and our bodies and energy have enough room so that we can feel good about doing things we actually find very important.
Very good.
I don't know if men feel like that.
It's different. Yeah. But I think
probably different personality types too.
And there's some men that are like that as well. Mm-hmm. It's just different. But this is good. This is a fun conversation.
Yeah. So anyways, be looking for the series that we're starting. We're going to go over we're going to start with Shrove Tuesday.
Okay.
Because that was some things that our friends at Cornerstone Reform do, and that I was like, what's Shrove Tuesday?
Uh-huh.
Shrove Tuesday, Ash Wednesday, Lent, Holy Week, Easter.
Okay. Very good. It's been fun.
Yeah.
And we...
I feel like my voice got better.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. Okay.
Thanks for listening.
That was really fun.